Dimitri wears diesel shoes. His shoes match his outfits flawlessly. Not in that pink shirt, pink sweatpants, pink shoes sort of way. His outfits are often from different stores, are different colors, and different styles, but they are unquestionably matching. They're also unquestionably hot. Having left a majority of my clothes in era fucking Zona, my outfits are... not outfits. And my shoes... During the last snowstorm, my shoes got the toes kicked out of them. My feet don't actually stick out of the toes, but I totally look like a homeless person from the ankles down. I wasn't completely aware of this until I was actually on my way into Logan Airport to pick Dimitri up. What I did know was that one of my many unreliable friends had flaked out, and as a result, my haircut had never happened. I was a long-haired, homeless-shoed freak in a non-matching outfit when I arrived at Logan late. I buzzed around baggage claim in the arrival gates. His flight arrived at 10:45, and I had arrived at Logan at 10:47. I am tempted to blame this on Deborah, but I should have known that she wasn't going to show up or even bother to call me to let me know she wasn't going to show up, because she is one of my friends, and my friends are unreliable. If they say they're going to be somewhere to meet me at 6:30, they may or may not be there by 8, and odds are they won't call to let me know that they're running behind. I've been moderately aware of this for a few years now. In fact, I've caught some of their unreliability. This is what happens when you belong to a community of people who advertise events starting at 7:30, but don't actually show up themselves until 9 o'clock. I'm cursing Deborah for not giving me a ride to Logan. She's supposed to catch a flight at 11:30, so I wasn't asking her to go out of her way, while I buzzered. I'm on pass number 5 when I realize Dimitri is behind me. Apparently, he's been following me for a turn or two. Probably want to kick myself for using Elvis's word, but the only thing I can think of to describe him is cute. We take a bus, then the T, then a bus, back to my place. Once Dimitri unpacks, we head out for Indian food. On our trek to the restaurant, Dimitri begins his one-man show. I don't want to bore you with the details, but I'm going to.
In my email, I specifically said you were to meet me at the airport with a granola bar.
I assumed you were kidding, I say, under the assumption that he is still kidding now.
Well, I was kind of kidding, but I'm also kind of hungry, though I guess, based on your excellent choice of footwear, that granola bars may be a bit out of your price range. Still, this is Boston. There must be some swank vegan restaurant with a dumpster out back you could root through. I mean you... Ah! Pigeons!
He screams, kicking them out of his way. He continues this way for about 10 minutes before asking,
Where is this place anyway? Are we actually going to India for this Indian food? If I'd known we were going to have to walk this long, it would have made you hail a cab!
It's right across the street, I say, and begin crossing.
Ah! Are you jaywalking? Oh my god, you are! I can't!
He looks both ways.
Oh god!
And then runs across the street like a Muppet with its fur on fire. You are so gay, I say, rolling my eyes, which isn't gay at all.
I'm not that gay,
he says, gaily.
I've only ever had one boyfriend. You've had hundreds.
I start counting on my fingers.
So statistically speaking, you are way gayer than me.
Before we're seated, he excuses himself to the bathroom. There's a copy of the entertainment section of Boston's free daily newspaper in the lobby, and it's open to an ad for a limited-time art exhibit. A human-sized gerbil cage. It's called Pest, and it's within walking distance of the New England Aquarium, where I'd planned on taking Dimitri anyway. I decide to call and make a reservation before Dimitri gets back from the bathroom.
There is no hamster wheel,
the artist says, crushing my grandeur vision with his false, fake accent, but everything else is remarkably realistic.
You're on your phone?
Dimitri says when he gets back, and immediately his phone rings, and he answers it. He continues to talk as the waitress leads us to our table, continues to talk while she takes our drink order, continues to talk while she gets our drinks, continues to talk.
Sorry!
He says when he gets off the phone.
Though I'm not sure why I should be sorry for being on the phone when you were on the phone when I got back from the bathroom!
He goes on to explain that some lesbian who he also knows from the internet has invited him out dancing tomorrow night.
You should come with us!
He spends most of dinner talking about being nervous. At no point do I hear food interrupt his rant, but he does manage to finish his curry faster than I finish my cucumber salad. He is still talking about being nervous when we arrive at the gerbil exhibit. And when I see its stunning location, I have to confess that I'm a bit nervous myself. Doesn't look like any art gallery I've ever seen. In fact, it looks exactly like the sort of vacant warehouse where serial killers rape, torture, and kill young art patrons and grind their bodies to dust so they can incorporate them in their next project. Dimitri vocally agrees with my inner monologue as we open the heavy wooden door that leads into
the obvious trap
art gallery. The stairway is filled with face shots of all the other unsuspecting people murdered on their way into the exhibit. Over the phone, the artiste had said that this exhibit was on the third floor. The sign says it's on the fourth floor. Given my experience with artistes, you'd think I'd follow the sign, but my common sense is being overridden by both my instinctual desire to flee this horrible place and Dimitri's constant chattering. Someone in one of the little cubicles on the third floor is either pureeing a human flesh smoothie or vacuuming up the clues from the last murder. So we tiptoe back to the staircase and make our way to the fourth floor. At the end of the long hallway is a set of bars that could only signify a gigantic gerbil cage, the place you lock up prisoners, or both. Turns out to be the gerbil cage exhibit, complete with wood chips, a fake hanging water bottle, large fake gerbil turds, a bowl of water, and another bowl full of stale crawlers that are probably supposed to look like gerbil food. There's no other door, and the windows are barred. While I kick fake turds, Dimitri swings on the giant bird swing, the only part of the exhibit that seems out of place with the whole gerbil cage mystique. I've owned several gerbils in my day and never bought a trapeze swing for any of them. Gerbils are shitty acrobats. It takes about 5 seconds, minutes, some small measurement of time to get bored. We have about an hour before we're supposed to meet Zuzu at the aquarium, so we walk very slowly. Zuzu is not at the aquarium when we get there. She is not at the aquarium 10 minutes after we were supposed to meet. She does not answer her phone when I call her, so a half hour after we were supposed to meet her, Dimitri and I head in. We are barely through the doors when a woman takes a picture
to commemorate
our visit. As much as I would like a photograph of Dimitri's visit, I'd rather it be one of us doing something fun, and not one of us being startled as we walked into a strange lobby. I would also not like to spend $10 for said picture. After making our way through the jellyfish exhibit, where Dimitri proved his skills at video games by defeating a jellyfish game designed for 6-year-olds, we arrive at the giant ocean tank. As we circle the tank, Dimitri rants about sharks and giant turtles before jumping back 5 feet and letting out a rather loud,
"Oh, gross!"
At first, I picture an amputated hand floating in the tank. But then I consider Dimitri's feelings on other human beings and realize he'd probably be overjoyed to see that the aquarium was feeding human remains to the fish. "What is it?" I ask.
"That fish! It's so huge and ugly! I hate giant things!"
I make a mental note not to show him my penis. Then I make another mental note that I don't have a giant penis, and we will both be safe should penis presentation time ever arrive. At the top of the tank, an old lady tells a young mom and her brood something interesting about sharks that I fully intend to remember and write about, but the goldfish part of my brain quickly vanquishes it so I can continue to obsess over Dimitri.
"You know," he says, "I was hungry. I really wanted to sit in front of the tanks and eat calamari and sushi, but that giant fish has ruined my appetite. I'll get you next time, fish!"
And then we arrive at my favorite part of the aquarium. the penguin pool. Well, I love all penguins. My favorite type of all are rockhoppers. Maybe it's the punk rock hair, maybe it's the way they honk for attention, I don't know. But it's at the rockhopper exhibits that I have my first revelation concerning my feelings for Dimitri. Rockhoppers are incredibly territorial, and while sociable, they don't appear to be overly friendly. While we watch, one of the aquarium employees moves around the pool doing something scientific. The rockhoppers take turns honking at him. One of them spends 10 seconds singing, and then another begins. They never overlap, and there's rarely a second between one penguin's honking and the next's. They are cute, obnoxious, and loud. Like Elvis. Like Alex. Like Dimitri. Nothing at all like David or Saint or Ryan. They were Magellanics. I thought I'd passed through my rockhopper phase, now preferring a less needy guy who loves me more than the attention I lavish on him. Don't get me wrong, I am not in love with Dimitri. I love his writing and the way he thinks. I think he is mentally and physically amazingly beautiful, but I'm not in love with him. I'm just terrified by how easily I could fall if the scenario was a little different. Say, we lived in the same city, or if I wasn't spending so much of his visit brooding over my irresponsible friends, or if he didn't already have a boyfriend. I may be a naive, lust-hungry, easy target for falling in love, but I have enough self-control to never allow myself to be in love with someone who is in a relationship already. All of these stupid thoughts are hopping along the obvious rocks in my head when my phone rings. Clarissa. While Celeste is a poet I know through poetry, Clarissa is a person I know through poetry. She's been an audience member at Twitara's, where I perform irregularly. A few weeks ago, her gay best friend and my sometimes foil, sometimes co-feature, Jeff, left for Turkey. The next time I saw her, she asked for my phone number. Apparently, she can't live without a gay redheaded slam poet in her life. Dimitri and I agree to meet her for coffee at a bookstore on Newbury Street. Like all of my other friends, Clarissa is late. I locate her via cell and determine that Dimitri and I have enough time to shop on Newbury Street before she'll arrive. First stop, Diesel, where Dimitri spends over $100 on a shirt that I could get at the Garment District for $5. I taunt him for being trendy. Clarissa is waiting when we get back to the cafe. Our server is hot, but completely incompetent. Clarissa and I are discussing whether I should cash my check so I can go properly shopping, when I hear Dimitri breathing heavily into a straw that's bent into his left ear.
It sounds like an airplane!
So I'm in crush with a 4-year-old. I turn to Clarissa to mock him, but she has my straw bent into her ear and says,
"This feels so good."
Clarissa needs to get laid. In an effort to reclaim some semblance of normalcy, I start talking about asses. Clarissa asks to see Dimitri's because she's so classy the entire word class is in her name. He would have turned red if his skin tone allowed. Instead, he stood up and walked away from us. Due to his baggy jeans, I can't yet comment on his ass. As soon as he's out of sight, Clarissa turns to me and says,
"He is not your type."
"What is my type?" I ask in my vaguely annoyed tone of voice.
"I don't know. He's so young. Don't get me wrong, he's adorable and really sweet, but don't you think you'd be happier with someone older?"
This from the 38-year-old, currently lusting after 18-year-old breakdancers. "He doesn't write like he's young," I say. And I mean, he does act young, but he's so self-aware. I act young all the time. It's what keeps me from being a depressed misanthrope like you. Wisely, she changes the subject.
Let's talk about sex. you know make love.
Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be.
And now, a brief interlude for Dimitri to tell you how I got that last story completely wrong. So, it's interesting to be writing about someone who actually reads this blog on a regular basis. I've tweaked the order of when things happened during Dimitri's visit in order to make certain points, but otherwise, I'm trying to be as honest as I can about his visit. Imagine my surprise when I wake up the next morning to the following email from a guy who is sleeping in the very next room.
The old woman at the aquarium didn't say much of importance. It was all just facts about sharks. The one dumbass woman was all, "Why don't these sharks eat everything?" And the old woman explained how little the sharks eat or how they feed them, and they usually just don't eat at all. God, how stupid. But then we had the idea of listening intently so that we could go down to one of the floors and repeat everything as if we just happened to know everything there was about tiger sharks. My criticism of your last post? Only one. I hate rockhopper penguins! They're awful, vile, terrible little bastards! I do not like having a parallel made between me and such stupid birds! Their hair was terrible! The noise they made was ridiculous! They all took turns but didn't go in any specific order, and there was a conflict! The one chick wanted to make her noise, and this guy took her place, so she started squabbling and making a big mess until she silenced the other guy, and then she didn't even go! What a bitch! I hate rockhopper penguins and their little societies! Remember that one fucking rockhopper penguin that left the rock with the others and stood with the other quieter, better penguins? The penguins on the main rock still respected his right to make noise during his own turn. What the hell did I say about sharks and turtles? Also, I fantasized about throwing one of the huge fish up in the air, letting it slam on the ground, and then stomping all over it to secure my dominion as top of the food chain. You also didn't say anything about getting lost and having a taxi driver give you the wrong directions, and you bringing it up in every conversation, no matter the topic. Don't get me wrong! I thought it was cute how you fixated on things that bother you to the point where you can't talk about anything besides how annoyed you are at taxi drivers!
They paved paradise, put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paid paradise, put up a parking lot. They took all the trees, put them in a tree museum.
You've been listening to the In Safe Mode podcast, Laughing in the Abattoir Part 6, Claiming Dimitri's Baggage, and a brief interlude for Dimitri to tell me how I got Claiming Dimitri's Baggage completely wrong. This podcast was brought to you by loud penguins with terrible haircuts and the men I've dated who may or may not sound exactly like them. The intro music for this episode was You're So Gay by Katy Perry. Incidental music was Loud Fucking Rockhopper Penguins Making Rockhopper Penguin Squawking Noises, as well as Let's Talk About Sex by Salt and Peppa. The outro music playing now is Joni Mitchell's Big Yellow Taxi. If you have any questions or just want to let me know what type of penguin or other waterfowl you think you are, please email me at insafemode@gmail.com or check out my website, www.crookedtreehouse.com.
Paradise, put up a parking lot. I said, don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone?